All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a post-draft Q&A where I'll be answering listener questions about what's the Falcons' offensive identity, who's on the roster bubble entering training camp, and what do we need to see from Desmond Ridder to know that he's the guy.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. We are free and available Monday through Friday on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, as well as on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel and you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So today's episode, we are getting close to the end of our 12 days of draft miss. I think this is day 11 with one more day left. And today we're going to be on a post-draft Q&A. So basically, you guys send in a whole bunch of Twitter questions to me. I will do my best to answer as many as I can in the next 30-ish minutes. So without further ado, let's jump into the first question. And that is from Andy S. Gallagher on Twitter. He asks, do you think the moves this offseason give any indication as to what the Falcons' identity will be under Arthur Smith? So not really, because I think they want to be a physical football team, but I don't think their moves indicate that that's the direction that they're really trying hard to get to. And I know that's different from the narrative you've heard from a lot of folks coming out post-draft that the Falcons got much more physical in the draft. And usually my thing is like, if one person says a thing, I'm like, okay, that's one random person's opinion. If two people say a thing, I'm like, that's a weird coincidence that two people had the same random opinion. And then when three people say a thing, like now, okay, now it's becoming a narrative. And so now I have to pour cold water on this narrative. And when you look at the Falcons, offseason moves before the draft, all right, you know, you look at their free agent signings. If you include the two CFL players that they added, they signed a total of 26 players to contracts this offseason, totaling about $35 million in their 2022 cap. That doesn't include Jake Matthews, Younghoe Koo, and Grady Jarrett, who all signed extensions. And if you were to fit those 26 players into broad categories, being, you know, playing special teams like the two long snappers, skill positions being quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, corner, and safety, and then trench players being offensive linemen, defensive linemen, and linebackers, 17 of their 26 signings went to skill guys, two went to special teams, and only seven trench players. And about 70% of that $35 million, about $25 million of it, was spent on those skill guys. And then you go into the draft with eight picks. Now you spent four of those on trench players. And maybe if you want to insist that John Fitzpatrick qualifies more as a trench player because he's a blocking tight end than a skill position player, you say they spent five out of their eight picks on trench guys. But the issue I have with that, like, again, that's fine. Like, no one's complaining about the Falcons investing in their quote unquote trenches, but based off of these categories. But the problem is, like, how many of these guys are actually physical in how they play the game? Yes, they play positions that are typically associated with physicality. But when you look at guys like Arnold Ebiketie and Troy Anderson and D'Angelo Malone, you don't look at their games and say, oh, these are physical football players. You actually look at the physicality element that they're bringing to the table as kind of lacking in a lot of ways with all those guys. So when you look at all these trench players, you know, really only Justin Schaefer is the only one that you would sit here and qualify, oh, that guy plays a physical style of football and also plays a physical position on the football field. You know, you look at Tyler Algier, certainly a physical running back, but again, like, I don't think he's more physical than Mike Davis is. Right? I think if you wanted to be a physical football team, you'd rather have Mike Davis on your team than Tyler Algier. That's my personal opinion. I know that may be controversial to some people. You know, certainly you can say Drake London is a physical wide receiver. No doubt about that. It's a big reason why I kind of liked him more than Treylon Burks back in February. But how much physicality is a wide receiver bringing to your team, right? That's one player, right? Not a whole lot, because it's not as if the Falcons haven't had physical wide receivers before. physicality was a big part of Roddy's game. Physicality was a big part of Julio's game. But, you know, you didn't define – those teams weren't defined by their physicality because of Roddy or Julio. It was defined more by Michael Turner and their running game and Patrick DeMarco and et cetera. Right? You know, like a wide receiver is not making you a more physical football team. So when I hear this narrative that, you know, the Falcons got more physical in this draft, I kind of scratch my head because it feels like the Falcons have invested far too few resources in trying to get more physical this offseason than they should have if that's the goal, to become more than that. So right now it's hard to sit here and tell. Like, again, I think they want to be more physical, but I don't know if they went out and did the things that you would want them to do in order to become more of that this offseason. So that's going to be probably the longest answer we'll give on today's Q&A, but we got plenty more questions, including some from Andy and others, talking about what the Falcons need to do to have a successful 2022, tanking, who's on the roster bubble, who are some free agents that the Falcons can sign this summer to shore up some of their problem spots along the roster. And we'll get into all of that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. But I want to talk about how Locked On Falcons is part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. If you don't know about Locked On Sports Atlanta, it includes all the tried and true shows covering Atlanta and Georgia sports like Locked On Hawks, Locked On Bulldogs, Locked On Falcons. But you have its own dedicated feed on Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast platform that includes three different shows, three different personalities, or four different personalities giving you three different perspectives on ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanitra Batiste. You got Hitting Hard with John Chuckery and A to Z with Mark Zeno. You can find them all on your preferred podcast platform. And guys, we know that this weekend is a big weekend for moms out there. And if you're looking for that special gift for that special someone in your life, I know it can be tough, particularly this time when you're kind of procrastinating a little bit. And helping you out is the jewelry experts over at BlueNile.com. They're available 24/7 via phone, via chat, and they can help you find the perfect gift that's going to fit everyone's budget. You can make this Mother's Day memorable and celebrate that special someone with something enduring like diamond earrings, elegant tennis bracelets, birthstone pendants, and so much more, available at BlueNile.com. And you can easily navigate through thousands of fine jewelry options at every single price point. This Mother's Day, give mom something she'll treasure forever with fine jewelry at BlueNile.com. And Locked On Falcons listeners are getting $50 off $500. This podcast exclusive is only good through Mother's Day. So use the code Locked On. Again, that's code Locked On, LOCKEDON. And with every order being insured and shipping free, it also arrives in the discreet package so that it won't give away what's inside. So shop stress free and find your forever peace by going to BlueNile.com today. So our first question comes from Terry Fonten Op from South Breeze 706. Shout out to DBN Report. He asks, what does a successful season look like for the Falcons discounting win-loss total? You know, if we're not taking wins and losses out of it, you know, I would say you want to see a team that's more explosive on offense. You want to see a functional run game. You want to see a functional offensive line. You want to see a functional pass rush. Can we get to 30 sacks this year? You know, that to me is the hope. You want to see players making strides, right? You want to see these guys grow into players that you can sit there and say, okay, that's a guy that can contribute, whether it's a role player, whether it's a low-level starter, whatever the case may be, on a good team rather than a guy that's starting because he's on a bad team, right? That's what you want to have that conversation. All right. We got a couple of questions from Falcons Nation 88. This first one is, what do you think our average points per game will be this season? Last year it was 18. I feel like if we can get to 23, 25, we will get to 7 wins again. So I'm expecting improvement, something in probably that 21, 22 points per game range. That's probably good enough to get the Falcons in terms of points scored rankings somewhere in that 18 to 24 range. So I think that's viable. If they can get, you know, above that, if they can get the league average, which is 23 points a game, I do think you can make a case that they probably could win 7 games. I do look at their schedule and I say, yeah, there's probably like 7 or 8 games or so, particularly if you count Carolina twice, where I could imagine them sitting here today. And again, we'll see what the conversation is come August, come September. But I could imagine sitting here right now that, okay, like if they can get to 24, they could beat that team 24 to 21, right? So, you know, now whether you think the Falcons can hold that other team to 21 points is a different conversation. But Falcons Nation 88's next question is, would you rather go 9-8 and miss the playoffs and see good development in Ridder, or go 3-14 and Ritter is not coming along and have a top three pick. So this is funny because the other day I was thinking, you know, this is probably going to be the only season where I'll ever advocate for the Falcons tanking, or where I won't have a problem with others advocating for the Falcons tanking. That's what I'll say. Right. I think I always tend to think that draft position is very overrated. But I think the one exception to that is quarterback. You know, quarterback's the exception to all the rules, right? So I think the worst case scenario you want for the Falcons, I think, is basically they're bad, but they're not quite bad enough to be picking really high to get a quarterback, right? So like finishing like 6-11 and picking 6th or 7th in the draft is not great. But in this scenario where you're saying, okay, we're 9-8, and you're saying that that's primarily driven by, you know, Desmond Ridder doing that, to me, that's significant overachievement for this football team. And that seems to me, at least sitting here today, tells me that Desmond Ridder's a real dude, a real quarterback. So I would rather go that. That to me says, oh, we solved the quarterback problem. Let's keep this thing rolling. Pizza Dunk asks, which undrafted free agent do you think is most likely to make the 53-man roster? So I haven't looked too deeply in the undrafted free agent class. The only guy I've really seen was glimpses of Kony Deng, the Cal outside linebacker, 2 years ago when I was watching Jalen Hawkins. And I was like, oh, this guy's got a little Leonard Floyd to his game. I'm curious where he'll be in a couple of years. But I haven't watched him since. When I did my initial 53-man roster projection over the weekend, I noticed that the front seven on defense, the depth was a little thin, and that's probably the easiest path, the path of least resistance for potentially one of these undrafted free agents to sort of, you know, have a good camp and make their way. So I would pick any of the defensive linemen, Deng, one of the edge rushers, and the linebacker from Colorado, as probably the best candidates, to one of those guys could emerge. Andy S. Gallagher asks, are there any high-profile players you believe are on the roster bubble? So I don't think John Kaminsky is a high-profile player. I did not have him in my 53-man roster, final roster projection. I think Marlon Davidson might qualify, right? You know, I don't think he's, you know, firmly on the bubble, but I don't think he's also firmly on the firmest of footing, right? I think there's also another scenario where you could sit here and see, you know, Caleb McGarry or Jermaine Ifedi get cut. Right. The loser of that right tackle battle, especially if it's Caleb McGarry, I could see getting released because they lack positional versatility. At least Ifedi has experience playing right guard. We'll see if the Falcons try him on the left side this summer. But Caleb McGarry's exclusively been a right tackle in the pros. He was exclusively a right tackle in college. And sort of if he's not starting, that doesn't have nearly as much value. So I could see a scenario where the Falcons do move on from either him or Ifedi at the end of camp, cutting him or trading him or whatever the case may be. Lonnie at Jelani234 asks, do you believe we will acquire anyone late in free agency, especially on the defensive line? I certainly think it's possible, but I don't expect the team to be in a hurry. My expectation is they'll probably let rookie minicamp go, and that ends about May 15th. You'll probably see some roster shuffling, bring in some of the guys that tried out and looked good, you know, cut some guys, whatever the case may be. And then maybe when we get into later phases of OTAs where they're getting to see guys on the field, maybe they start to look at some of the potential D linemen or whatever the case may be at other problem areas to bring in those guys. So I wouldn't expect, you know, tomorrow or anything. Now, maybe I wound up eating those words, but like, I wouldn't expect anything to happen in the next week or so. Scott Brinson asks, do you think Grady Jarrett will be able to thrive in this system and be worth his large contract, a bargain, but still a big contract? Or do you think it would have been a more effective, more cost effective to be in and be more effective production wise to have just drafted Jordan Davis or something like that? I think Grady Jarrett's going to be fine in the system as long as he gets more help. Bird Dog 16 asks, do we have the size at nose tackle that we really to really run a 3-4 defense effectively? We have size. Anthony Rush is like 350 pounds. The question is, do we have skill? Size is not the problem. Brandon Rogers at Brand Raj on Twitter asks, are there any available guards or speedy wide receivers in free agency still? Guards, Quentin Spain, Ode Abushi have experience at left guard and have experience playing outside zone scheme. Speedy wide receivers, Will Fuller still out there. So he makes sense there. Joe at youngster Joey _3 asks, do you think the Falcons would benefit from signing a veteran slot / speedster receiver to help develop our younger weapons? Or do you think we have an in-house answer like Patterson or recently signed Tate? If not, who are some good fits for us within our price rides. Again, Will Fuller, throw that out there. And I always think it's a benefit for young players to have some veteran experience in the room to teach them. And I don't know if the Falcons have in-house options. I don't know if Auden Tate is the guy because he's basically only played one season. And Cordarrelle Patterson probably is going to be in the running backs room, not the wide receiver room. Ryan Helton at That Crazy YM asks, with this newfound cap space, would you prefer an experienced edge to provide veteran leadership for the rookies, another defensive lineman like mentioned in Wednesday's episode, and a better option at guard or center or other? So if you had asked me this question a week ago, Ryan, I would have said guard, because at that time I was assuming that the Falcons would draft a defensive lineman. And so that would hopefully mitigate some of those issues. So I am surprised that they did not draft that. But of course, the board didn't fall that way, right, as they say. So I would say probably I'm leaning more towards getting a defensive lineman right now than I was before. And also part of the reason contributing to that is, you know, I'm petty and I would love at the end of the year to say I told you so, if and when the offensive line struggles again. So that's we'll leave that. And we still got a few more questions to answer, including talking a lot more about the quarterback situation, why there are such differing and polarizing opinions about Marcus Mariota, why the Falcons prefer Justin Schaefer over his Georgia teammate Jamari Sawyer, and what fuels my love for fullbacks. And we'll get into all those questions and more as we wrap up today's post-draft Q&A episode, guys. But before we get there, I want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. And of course, always have recommendations for what your second listen should be. And of course, why not check out the Locked On Braves podcast to get the daily scoop on the Atlanta Braves. And for those of you that want to find that post-game coverage that you're looking for, to get those post-game wrap-ups almost every single day when the Braves are playing, you can find that on the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast feed. So, guys, I want to tell you that while baseball is back, you also got NBA playoffs, you got NHL playoffs coming up. And of course, if you want to get that extra action in, why not head to betonline.net, the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. You can find podcasts, the latest odds, contests, player props. BetOnline has it all. And it's not just baseball or basketball or hockey. You can find boxing, UFC, golf, esports, your favorite Vegas casino games. Find it all by heading over to betonline.net. And if you're a football junkie like most of the people listening, you can find those season draft props. If you're sitting here saying, oh, Aaron, you're doubting the Falcons over under 4.5 wins, oh, the Falcons are definitely going over, BetOnline's the place to put your money where your mouth is. So head on over to betonline.net. BetOnline is where the game starts. So our next question comes from Delible Think on Twitter. He asks, what has been Mariota's biggest problem? Injuries, coaching carousel / system changes? Has he just been bad? Any reason to believe that this year he can be closer to as advertised coming out of the draft? So we talked about this a little bit, or quite a bit, with Locked On Titans host Tyler Rowland about a month ago. I believe it's the March 31st episode on YouTube and the April 1st episode on the audio version. It's been a while that I kind of forgot exactly what Tyler was saying led to Mariota's struggles. I know injuries played a factor towards the end there. I do think, contrary to popular opinion, because we don't spend a lot of time heaping praise on Mariota on this podcast, I do think Mariota is a good quarterback. I do think in the right environment, he could be a successful playoff caliber quarterback. I don't really see the Atlanta as that right environment, because I really do think to make Mariota the best version of himself, you need to have that supplemental run game, because I just don't think he's the type of quarterback that's really built to drop back and throw the ball 35, 40 times a game and win. And I feel like that's probably where the Falcons are headed, particularly if their defense doesn't make significant strides moving forward, that they're going to be forced to throw the ball in the second halves of games. And I don't think that's going to be conducive for Mariota playing his best football. But I do think there are some elements of Mariota's game that I do like. I think the running ability, I think the willingness to force feed his go-to playmakers, as I talked about previously, watching him step in for injured Derek Carr a couple of years ago with the Raiders, basically he was force feeding the ball to Darren Waller. And so if you want to see high volume of targets towards Kyle Pitts and Drake London this year, I think Mariota can provide that and also make some plays with his legs. So I think he can do some stuff, but without sort of that supplement to the offense, you know, what outside of him running and throwing up 50-50 balls to those receivers, I don't know if the Falcons are going to have that much offense to sustain. And so I don't necessarily see Mariota, you know, turning this team around, as some people will say. Paul S. Dudley's question is, do you think Watson debacle could have been an Arthur Blank meddling in football decisions? He's been known to overplay the Falcons' hand publicly. Not a big leap to imagine he'd conjure up something rash behind closed doors. So, Paul, you know, this is evidence that not everybody listens to every episode. But, Paul, we talked about this quite a bit in March during the whole Watson debacle, if you want to call it that, that yes, I do think that was primarily Arthur Blank meddling and trying to get butts in the seats. That's the primary factor in why I thought Malik Willis was a legit option and candidate for the Falcons to pull the trigger on at the top of this draft, because I think Arthur Blank's tired of going to the stadium each and every Sunday and seeing a half empty stadium. And I think this team is desperate for somebody, something to come in and energize his fan base. And to me, my thought process was like, Malik Willis is the most obvious person to do that. But obviously, the you know, cooler heads prevailed and the Falcons didn't go in that direction. So we'll see if Desmond Ridder or your boy Marcus Mariota can provide that. So Rishab at Rishjad on Twitter asks, who wins the battle at quarterback starter between Ridder, Mariota, and potentially Franks? Of course, Felipe Franks is definitely going to win the starting job. Jason Tani at JKT710 asks, Mariota was a certified legend at Oregon prior to Tennessee, a legend. Duck fans still root for him today as if he had just left them. Why? Well, Jason, I think it's because college football fans are psychopaths, right? There's an old saying that football is not for well-adjusted individuals. Now, I've modified that statement to say football fandom is not for well-adjusted individuals, and I think college football fandom is for the least adjusted individuals on the planet. James Long at James Long GSU asks, two-parter. First, assuming Mariota is the week one starter, what would be the minimum win total that would be prohibitive if Ridder starting by around week 7 to 9? And second, what do you think we will set the bar at for what Ridder has to accomplish in order for us not to grab Bryce, CJ, et cetera, next year? So to answer your first question, let's say week 8, right? And if you look at historical record data, a 2-6 team has a 1% chance of making the playoffs. A 3-5 team has a 9% chance. And I believe a 4-4 team has a 33% chance. So I imagine the Falcons have to have some semblance of a playoff hope. So at least 3-5 start to the season for Mariota to maintain his job going into the second half of the season. If they, you know, they start 2-6 or worse, then I feel like we're going to be turning the page to Desmond Ridder sooner versus later. To answer your second question, honestly, you know, it's hard to say like exactly what Ridder has to do. I think you're looking for flashes, right? You're not expecting him to pull a Matt Ryan, you know, although, you know, no one's going to complain if he does, but come in and elevate a team that I think a lot of people think is going to win 3-5 games to a playoff team. I don't think that's a fair expectation to put on him. And I don't think Michael Turner's walking through that door either, which goes back to a previous question we talked about. But honestly, I think in terms of the Falcons looking at other quarterbacks next year, I think a lot of it's going to be dependent on opportunity costs, right? There's a very different conversation about whether or not we should go get a quarterback if you're picking in the top 2 or 3 after a 3-14 season versus if you're picking 7 or 8 because you just won 6 or 7 games. Right. And so if you're not in a position to get that major upgrade at quarterback, you're not having the conversation about making the major upgrade at quarterback, and you'll be able to much more easily convince yourself of those flashes that you saw from Ridder late down the stretch. Oh, he did a couple of things against the Seahawks in the second half of the season. You know, maybe we can build off of that. Like it becomes much easier to do that if you're picking 7th or 8th, you know. So our next question comes from Debo. He asks, can we stop talking about the new regime having the best player available draft strategy, considering they picked Drake London 8th overall? He wasn't even the best wide receiver on the board. So no, we can't stop talking about it because the regime's not going to stop talking about it. They're going to insist that they had Drake London in among the top 8 players in their draft board. And there's no way that any of us can prove that they're wrong. So, you know, whether you choose to believe that being true or not is up to you. I'm not going to twist your arm by any means. And if you're saying Drake London wasn't the best wide receiver on the board, I'm assuming you're referring to only Jamison Williams, because that's the only possible player that you could possibly rate above Drake London. Because if you rated any of these other wide receivers above Drake London, you were just simply wrong, sir. Al Montgomery, PAC at Pac Montgomery, asks, why didn't they draft Jordan Davis in the first round to compliment Grady Jarrett on a defensive front? Well, because he was not one of the top eight players on the draft board. Falcons Nation 88 asks, why do people think the media boards are the consensus NFL team boards? And I think this is owed to the fact that, you know, fans are so desperate for any, you know, not to be too condescending when I say this, but fans are so desperate for any information that they take what little kernels they get and think it's a full meal. Right. And you see this with the consensus draft boards, which I think are valuable, but they're not indicative of what teams are, because media members are making their rankings and their projections based off of a generic team, a generic scheme, while actual NFL teams have real schemes and actual, you know, teams that they tailor their boards towards. You also see this with people putting too much stock in mock draft simulators and thinking, oh, this is predictive of how the draft is actually going to go, where the mock draft had this guy going, you know, two rounds later than he actually went. So that means that player was a reach. And it's like, no, not really. And then you look at the player visits, right? Right. The Falcons didn't have Desmond Ridder in for a visit. And the skinny on it was because they didn't need to do additional homework on him. They had done all the homework that they needed to not need a visit. Meanwhile, they brought in guys like Malik Willis, Sam Howell, and Matt Corral, presumably because they needed to do more work on them. And again, there's a variety of reasons that teams bring players into visits, but too many fans look at these player visits as if, oh, these are the players that are definitely going to be at the top of each and every team's board. And it's like, that's not really the case. That's not how they're utilized. So it's basically, you know, to answer your question, it's just a larger issue of fans take every little tidbit of information and treat it like it's the Holy Grail, treat it like it's the Rosetta Stone. I kind of liken it to like you have a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and you get a couple of pieces and you feel like you've solved the entire puzzle, but you didn't. You just had like one little corner solved and that's all you did. And like, but fans treat that one little corner as if, oh man, we unlocked the Holy Grail or the Rosetta Stone or whatever the case may be. So Callum Clark at Mr. Callum Clark asks, hey, Aaron, love the Locked On Falcons podcast. Appreciate it, Callum. I would be curious to hear your thoughts breaking down why the Falcons might have preferred to take Justin Schaefer over Jamari Salyer, who I understand many had a higher grade on. So I haven't looked into it. I saw a couple of people tweeting about it over the weekend, but apparently maybe there's some injury red flags surrounding Jamari Salyer and why he fell into round six, where I think a lot of people, many people were sort of projecting him in that 2-4 round range. I also think the Falcons are kind of falling into the trap of thinking, well, the reason why Jalen Mayfield struggled last year was because he made a position switch, and that's the only reason why he struggled at left guard last year. And the position switch, don't get me wrong, was a significant factor. But when you look at, say, Schaefer versus Salyer, Schaefer has 26 career starts at left guard. Salyer only has one. And so the Falcons are just basically, oh, well, this guy actually played left guard, and that's the problem. We just need a guy that actually has experience playing this position to push Jalen Mayfield, and just time and experience will allow Jalen Mayfield to showcase his skill set, all those various things. So I don't really buy into that, but we can talk about that probably when we get to June, when we take a deeper dive on Justin Schaefer and the offensive line issues. Calvin Kerr at King Kerr 21 asks, what's your ceiling for Drake London? I'll share that when we probably do the Drake London scouting report on probably Monday the 16th. Originally I was hoping to do it next Friday, because that would culminate Locked On Drake London week is what the plan was. But of course the schedule is getting released next week, so I have to push that back at least one episode. So probably Sunday night, Monday morning, somewhere around then is when I'll drop the Drake London scouting report. And I'll have a final sort of ceiling for him. But right now, my initial prognosis is I might go as high as Michael Thomas right now. Maybe we'll see. We'll see. Micah Langston too, and Craig Davis have similar questions. Calvin Ridley, Micah's is Calvin Ridley. What would you do and what do you think the Falcons will do? And Craig's is quick question. Is the low chance of Ridley returning after suspension because of what he did, or is it that the Falcons wouldn't want to pay him? So what the Falcons will do is they'll cut Ridley once he's reinstated. What I would do is I would cut Ridley once he's reinstated. You know, I think Ridley has played his last snap in Atlanta. I think essentially the team looks at it as he let the team down by, you know, gambling and doing something stupid. I have no fault in that response to it. And I think, you know, especially after the Drake London selection, I think pretty much he's done in Atlanta. If it wasn't clear before, now it is. Our last question comes from Mike at Michael 5 Ritter. He asks, did you play fullback? And if not, what draws you to that position? Well, I did not play fullback. I did not play football. What draws me to the fullback position is mainly I fell in love with how Ovi Mahaly played that position a decade ago. And I feel like it's kind of football at its purest, right? You know, watching Ovi clear those runways for Michael Turner, you know, back from 08 to 2010 was breathtaking. The whole, to me, is the quintessence of football, right? It's the Oklahoma drill. It's Thunderdome, right? You have him and a linebacker entering hole. Two men enter, one man leaves, and Ovi was consistently the one guy that left. Same thing with Patrick DeMarco. When you have a high-impact fullback, to me, again, it's the quintessence of football, and it doesn't get any better. The physicality, that's what we're talking about, physicality. You know, that, to me, is the essence of football. So that's going to do it, guys. Just barely over 30 or ish minutes in terms of the recording. So I feel like I accomplished my mission, even if the Falcons didn't accomplish their mission of fixing the trenches in the draft in this offseason. But with that being said, guys, we will plug what's on deck for tomorrow. That's Jarvis Davis of the Locked On Sports Atlanta ATL Day One podcast to give his thoughts on the Falcons draft now that it's had a week to marinate. You know, he was also infamously not a big fan of the Falcons going for a wide receiver in round one. So we'll get Jarvis's thoughts on it now that he's had to let it settle for a week or so on tomorrow's episode. And if you want to provide questions for future Q&As, and I know I didn't get to everybody's questions, so at some point we'll probably do, you know, a leftover mailbag. Don't know when we'll get to it. But if you want to provide your feedback to me and ask future questions for future Q&As, of course, you can do so via Twitter at Locked On Falcons, Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, or you can leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube page. Guys, I appreciate it. I hope you check out as your second listen after you've made Locked On Falcons your first listen, which we thank you for. Your second listen, why not check out Locked On NFL, still covering all the latest action post-draft and during draft weekend, as well as the roster moves around the league on the Locked On NFL podcast. And you, of course, you can find that free and available on all the same podcast platforms you can find Locked On Falcons, including on YouTube. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.